Packet Pushers.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Packet Protector, the podcast at the intersection of networking and security, not the podcast where we tell you to eat your security vegetables, except for maybe Drew at the end sometimes. I'm Jennifer J.J. Vanilla here with Drew Conry Murray, and today we have Mauricio Sanchez joining us. Fantastic professional, lots of experience. He's currently the Senior Director of Enterprise Security and Networking at Del Oro Group. If you're not familiar with Del Oro, they are one of the analyst agencies, but different than the Forresters and the Gartners of the world. Del Oro is a quantitative research firm, so they do a lot of market analysis. It's a completely different take on exploring these different vendors. So Drew, we talk through all sorts of stuff. We talk about SASE and the market's redefinition of SASE that's just started just in the past few weeks. Some of the up and coming vendors in the space of network security, Mauricio's kind of 5-year outlook and the 2024 look back into 2025. What else is striking you?
Yeah, Mauricio was great. It's interesting to me to understand how analyst firms work. And as you mentioned, Del Oro is different from, you know, the Gartners and the Forresters of the world. They are essentially focusing on the market size and what piece each vendor has. So they take a different look, but he's also got a good technical background. So just getting that sense of how an analyst firm works, what they do, the value of the work, and then having some interesting conversations about, you know, the development of certain security markets, including SASE, SSE. And we also get some outlook on AI and quantum as well.
Yeah. And CNAPP, and what is Palo doing in this space? And how are they integrating everything into this new Cortex cloud? So for those of you who are going, ooh, an analyst, I have to tell you, I've actually known Mauricio for a long time. He has a very technical background, super smart dude, has patents in network security and crypto. So I think you're really going to enjoy this.
So Mauricio, welcome. And just to kind of level set, the analyst community looks at the IT industry in lots of ways. My perception of Del Oro is you're sort of focused on like how vendors are doing in the market, meaning like, you know, revenue, share of a market, whatever. So I guess I want to start with getting a background on how Del Oro measures a technology market and let's say network security. And where do you measure it on? Are we talking about like units sold, revenue, whatever? What are those metrics?
So first, thanks, Drew, for inviting me, and JJ, good to see you as well. Del Oro is a quantitative market research firm, and quantitative meaning that what we deal with day in, day out are the numbers behind the technology markets that we track. And at the end of the day, it's the rule of the almighty dollar in terms of business performance and saying, let's put these bucket of vendors and solutions that those vendors may produce into certain categories and then track them and say, what's happening? You know, where are the profit pools? Where's money being spent? Where is it not being spent? And so at the end of the day, what we produce is oodles and oodles of Excel spreadsheets for our clients.
Did you just say oodles?
Yes, I did.
You just said oodles and oodles. Okay. All right. Making sure.
Let's face it. Excel is pretty dry. Right? It's like no one really gets excited about Excel. But other than the people that we service who like the numbers and at the end of the day want to understand who is in that race, like in the racetrack, you know, which car is leading and you know, who's overtaking which other car. And so the evolution of how we create the taxonomy is based on conversations with the vendors, with customers, and then be able then to align to a general sense to, okay, these set of solutions can be classified under this particular banner, like firewalls. That's pretty easy, right? Because firewalls have been around for 30 years. Like 5 years ago, SASE was all over the place. It's like, what is a SASE vendor and who participates in SASE market was many hours of debate. More recently, it's been things like cloud workload security, right? It's like, is it CNAPP? Is it DSPM? Is it CWPP? Is it something else? It's like, okay. So that's the fun part of my job is trying to wrangle the cats.
But you're essentially looking at market share in a particular category, whatever Del Oro has decided counts as a category.
Exactly. And so today there are a couple of what I would say longstanding markets that we track that we've got a historical record going back to, in some instances, to the late 90s. Many of the things that we track, like firewalls, that started in 2008. I joined Del Oro in 2020 and started to put my fingerprints on the service by then looking at SASE as one of the big pieces with SSE, Security Service Edge, and bought an SD-WAN from our networking practice, and then started to sink my teeth on the cloud workload security. So it's a living document, but there is a way to be able to look at the historical record to be able then to compare and contrast, which is one of the key things our clients look for.
And I had some questions because I was reading the kind of big picture view of this network security market and the forecast for it. And to Drew's point, in the network security, it looks like you guys have firewall, SSE, SWG, so secure web gateways, WAF, an ADC, application delivery controllers. So I was kind of curious, because what I don't see in here is some of the newer, I don't know, everybody makes up acronyms for things these days. The newer class where we're kind of doing on-prem networking behavior and anomaly detection, visibility, whatever the new class of that product is called.
EDR, NDR stuff.
Yeah, NDR stuff. And then we see like application delivery controllers, web application firewalls. So is the goal to kind of stick with the spirit of the solution over a long period of time so that you can track that market trend over time instead of whatever the hot flashy thing is from quarter to quarter?
We try to do both, right? And so there is longstanding markets where the methodology, once it's set in stone, like for firewalls, our clients expect us to stay true to that, right? Because if data is going to be compared from 2008 to now, you got to have some semblance of apples. Now, the question you ask is like, under the banner of network security, where do things like, I think you mentioned NDR, which in my view is more so in the vein of security operations. So I think one thing to take into account is when I say network security, you know, it's very focused and tailored to the market that you just listed out. But in the bigger market, network security, you could add in, you know, endpoint security is piece of network security. You could add in the cloud workload piece. You could add in the security operations piece, which is where things like the SIEM, SOAR, NDR, XDR fit into the picture. And so while I don't publish that piece of the technology landscape just yet, given that I'm collecting information from all sorts of vendors, right? You look at the major quote unquote network security vendors like Palo or like Fortinet or like Cisco, these folks are super wide portfolios. They may have started with firewalls or network security in the way that I've defined it, but now they're all over the map.
Oh, yeah. TVs, toasters.
Yes, exactly. And so stay tuned is probably the easiest way to put it, that eventually there are plans to start getting into those adjacencies that today we don't cover.
The lines are so blurry now.
They are, right? And that's one of the fun and challenging things, right? We go back to the SASE as kind of a recent historical case where in 2020, when the pandemic hit and SASE became the buzzword of the day, I can't tell you how many hours I spent trying to explain, this is my definition of SASE, but then they would say, no, this is my definition of SASE. So we just go back and forth. And sure, am I involved, as did the markets evolve? And I think then we got into a steady state. And of course, now perhaps we're moving to a new state.
So who's consuming the analysis that Delaware is putting out?
We're quantitative in nature. So the vendors are the easy pickings there.
So they want to see where they stand and how they're stacking up.
Exactly. Because they want to say we are number one in market share. Right? That's the easy thing. So about 60% of our clients are vendors.
I'm going to jump in there and ask you though, do they also use you kind of for that market forecasting, like instead of them doing their own research? Because I'm looking at some of the other things you guys have put out where it's got historical and trending analysis per segment here. And that seems like it would be just fantastic for a OEM to take and then kind of work out their marketing. Their strategy as an OEM around that for product development and sales for the next, you know, year or quarter.
Absolutely. Because not only do we do the historical quarterly, twice a year, we publish our five-year forecasts. And so some of the recent blogs that I put out have been anchored to where is this market going and the size of the market. So yes, the people take us and create an ensemble forecast, right? Because as the truism goes, when you get more than one smart person together in a room, usually leads to better decisions. So people use us together with other firms and their own internal teams to develop their own forecast.
So you said about 60% is vendors. What is the rest?
Yeah. So then technology vendors, so the Palos and Ciscos of the world in the network security land. But then we have a sizable presence with the financial community. So the equity folks, right? The people picking stocks, making investments in New York and San Francisco. And then there's a long tail of the entire supply chain from semiconductors to contract manufacturers to service providers as well. The hyperscalers, telcos, and everyone in between. We even get pulled into government agencies throughout the world, right, that want to understand relative size of industries, be able to do the work they do in measuring economic output.
So when we see an acquisition occurring and we're like, some big company is buying some smaller company for some ungodly amount of billions of dollars, and we can't figure out why the crap they're spending that much money on it, we can just now look at you.
Well,
somewhere there's a market report that told them it was worth that, right?
There is, probably in certain instances. And yes, I'll leave it at that. to be honest, each analyst here at Dell'Oro has got their own perspective and biases, right? And what I tell my clients off the bat is like, I try to be pragmatic, I try to be true and not overinflate the expectations. So I'm with you, JJ, that I see some of these acquisition numbers. It's like, I told them one thing, but then they ran off and said this other thing. It's like, okay, well, I can come out and say, that's not what I said.
Well, those are the factors. They're probably doing some aqua hires and investors got to get paid. And big numbers are also impressive sounding. So
tarot card readers.
Right.
Yes. And I've got one of those eight balls. Every once in a while, I need to shake it.
Yeah. Looks promising. Not today.
So we're recording in the first quarter of 2025. Can you give us a sense of the current size of the network security market and what things look like over the next couple of years to you?
We are in first quarter, but I'm actually just wrapping up fourth quarter because we run about a couple of months behind since earnings are still coming out for the fourth quarter. I put out a blog last year calling 2024 the year of the reset, at least when it comes to enterprise spend, because during the pandemic, it seemed like wallets were open, right? We would hear from enterprises, it's a blank check. It's like, I need to get my workforce, I need to respond to the current crisis, which is a pandemic. And when it came to security spend, it just seemed that there wasn't really a price that enterprises were not willing to spend. Get into 24, I think people started to realize as contracts started to come up for renewal, it's like, did I really buy as much as I did? Or did I really need to spend as much as I did?
A lot of the federal funding ran out too. I mean, I know during that initial period, right, 2022, 23, there was this influx of federal funding as emergency funds for purchasing to deal with the sudden, you know, work remote COVID situation. And then of course that tapered off.
Yes, that was one factor. The other factor was the whole supply chain, right? It was like the toilet paper. I don't know if you guys remember going to the store and they're like,
oh God, yes.
There was no toilet paper. And when people saw that there was no hardware to be had, we heard in 2022 that people were spending future year's budget just to get in line because as the supply chain got snarled and the lead times grew as far as 4 to 5 quarters,
yeah,
you're talking about a year. To get something. So people were freaking out. Well, guess what? In 23, thereabouts, the supply chain started to catch up very quickly. And all of a sudden, boom, a tsunami of stuff arrived at the front door.
Yeah, loading docks are packed full of equipment.
They were.
Do you think a lot of that's still just sitting on shelves and boxes still?
What we've heard is that in the second half of last year, indigestion started to ease. So I think the decks have been cleared and now people are starting to feel a little bit better to take another bite.
So that sounds like then looking ahead after a reset of 2024, we might start to see growth again in 2025 and as far as you're willing to forecast.
Absolutely. So the 24, I peg it at the mid-single to high single-digit growth overall in the network security market. And this is coming off double-digit around 15 to 16% during the height of the pandemic. And I foresee that 25 is going to be a year of starting to get going again. And over the course of next couple, we'll probably get back into that double-digit. What I'm not saying is that people are going to spend as aggressively as they did during the pandemic. And I think, JJ, you hit on one of the things is that there is enough that flushness of cash sloshing around.
You know, especially now.
I know. Yes.
I'm going to leave it at that, but especially now. We don't have as federally funded programs at the moment. So, yep, you're not getting that money, friends. Sorry.
Exactly. A lot of tink cupping going around right now. So that is a huge question mark here for the North American region, right? That I think remains to be seen how bad it comes to impact. And so what we can say is that, okay, we're not going to grow as strong as we did during the pandemic. There's nothing there to say that that's going to happen.
And you said North American, you know, and obviously I'm making jokes about the US government because that's what we do. But the UK is revamping their security and resilience bill that redoes one of their 2018 kind of network and infrastructure security programs. So they're kind of revitalizing that. I would expect the European market would have a similar uptick.
Yes, it's generally the favorable winds that I see are across the world, and the two biggest markets being North America and EMEA, right? Particularly North America being about half of total spend on a worldwide basis.
And I remembered reading in one of your blog posts about, you know, some of the other technology enhancements that are coming. So there was a mention of like the use of AI in our workflows for operations, basically, and, you know, Wi-Fi 7, you know, just new stuff that sometimes is going to require new pieces, parts on the network infrastructure because of uplink speeds, power over Ethernet, all of these other things. What else are you seeing in terms of just new trends in like new tech that's coming and driving some of that?
Well, I think you hit on probably the loudest one in the room right now, which is AI, which I see both on the usage of AI within the security solution. So in other words, they're sprinkling the AI pixie dust and then saying, you need to buy this newer version because this one has the AI pixie dust. And so you need to refresh. And so that's a motivation to part with your money. The other piece is the fact that AI presents a different threat surface and presents a different model of network requirements. And so network architecture and security architecture is changing, which again is another motivation to have to spend money and be able then to get to the latest and greatest. So I think we're very early on in terms of that impact. And what I tell people is that that is the billion-dollar question right now about just how big the impact is. And the stance that I currently have, it's not over the top, but it's built in. And I expect that there will be some upside as we gain clarity on the AI side.
Clarity on the AI side. Clarity and AI are two things I'll never think together in the same sentence. I have questions around zero trust, SASE, SSE, because I think a lot of our listeners are caught up in projects and programs in their environments that are related to these things. So the first thing I want to untangle quickly is some of the analysts and agencies and markets are now kind of rolling back out of their original definition of SASE, which for them had included, you know, SD-WAN and basically the routing of the packets moving around as opposed to just the rest of the security services. I know you've mentioned like, you know, SASE and SSE while we've been talking. I've seen it referenced in your blog post. So how do you guys define SASE and SSE? Are they separate? What's lumped in there and who are those players?
Yes. And going back to what we're talking about, the fact that these are living markets, not static, SASE has gone through an evolution in the 5 years that I've been covering it. For me, SASE has always been the intersection of networking and security. And so it's always been the value of a solution that is tied to the networking side, SD-WAN, and the value of cloud delivered security, which is SSE. Uh-huh. And I think what we're seeing is that there was, I think, a thought at some point that these solutions, particularly in large enterprise, would collapse into one. I've never been a believer of that. And I think now that that has come true, what we're seeing is that people are saying, well, large enterprises who are primarily driving the SASE market continue to buy networking and security separately, but want it to be closely integrated together when they do deploy it. They just don't want a single solution that supposedly does both. Network ops wants their SD-WAN solution and SecOps wants their SSE solution.
Is that just how budgets are traditionally allocated inside these organizations, or is there some other factor that's keeping those worlds kind of separate still?
It is some of that, but I also think that if you go back to what I said, it's primarily driven by large enterprise. These typically follow the best of breed. And so right now in these converged solutions, though getting better, they're not seen as best of breed, nor do people want to put all their eggs in a basket that is a single technology stack. So they prefer to have some separation of duty between these two sides of the coin, right? And so there is the budget, and then there's the technology procurement patterns that exist.
Mauricio is always so politically correct when he answers things. Of course, like you have to now with what you do. But I'm going to give you the unvarnished JJ opinion here, which is I think from what I saw at least, and I think Mauricio, yeah, it's changed now. But when SASE first was released, because it was a lot of cloud forward, cloud first security features and solutions and networking, we didn't have vendors that did both of those things well. They would do like one piece of something really well and the rest of it was just complete rubbish. And you weren't getting best of really anything. Like maybe you got this subset of features that worked for you, but you certainly weren't getting a really good solution for this piece and a really good solution for the data routing piece of it.
Yes, that's right. And large enterprise being the most demanding. But to complete my thought is that I do see certain vendors, and I'll mention one that I track because in my tracker, I look at SASE also from the lens of implementation. So is it disaggregated or modular, which it's two pieces, two solutions coming together? And so vendors, JJ, as you pointed out, may have a certain degree of strength, historical strength in either of those. And then you've got smaller vendors like Cato Networks, who are coming in with a single technology stack and growing very rapidly. But for them, it's historically been the mid-market, which is, again, as you know, JJ, is more so open to the good enough. And as long as that's good enough, then hey, who's the wiser to make life a little simpler by just dealing with one solution? So I think at the end of the day, right now, large enterprise will continue to be this disaggregated because, again, there isn't a single vendor that can do everything well on both sides of the coin. And then we're starting to see these smaller vendors coming in from down market opportunity, and we'll see how far they can get.
So you're saying for the large enterprise side, you're seeing a continued appetite for, I'm going to get my SD-WAN piece from vendor A and my cloud delivered security services from vendor B?
Well, at least the SD-WAN and the SSE piece, right? So a large enterprise, because if you look at our trackers and we've made press releases here, is at top of the hill, SSE, Zscaler, SD-WAN, top of the hill, Cisco, right? Mm-hmm. Is that really surprising? If you think about it, probably not. And so that's what we see in many instances in large enterprises. It's a Cisco networking shop. And when they went to deploy cloud delivered security, then it's Zscaler.
Okay.
I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm going to ask you, are there any kind of up and coming smaller niche players in the zero trust SASE SSE network security space that we should maybe kind of keep an eye on?
Yes, because I do track a number of the smaller startups, not particularly tied to SASE. I did mention Cato, which is a smaller vendor and they're still private. Mm-hmm. But I think the lens to answer that question is about, I just published a new advanced research report on what I call distributed cloud networking, which is my positioning paper to discuss what is beyond SASE? Where does multi-cloud networking fit into this piece? You know, how is the middle mile being reinvented? And so I've done a number of blogs in that front. And so you've got smaller players that are doing interesting things like Alkira or Grafient, yeah, as an example. Yeah. And so, yes, networking is sexy again, because for the longest time, being now that I've been 25 years in the industry, there have been periods where it's like wallpaper, right? It's like trying to sell wallpaper.
When it comes to analysts, Mauricio, you're not the average bear. Our listeners may or may not know this, but you came from a deep technical background in the area of network architectures and everything relating to moving data around. You even have patents in network security and I think crypto as well.
Yes, I cut my teeth 20 years ago when network access control was just getting off the ground, and I was spearheading efforts in the ITF and Trusted Computing Group to do that. And then I did OpenFlow and OpenSwitch and everything in between. So I've got a lot of scars.
Oh. OpenFlow was an attempt to make networking sexy again. Didn't quite work out.
Exactly.
Well, I feel like we've come around to the principles, just it wasn't via OpenFlow, but we've come around to the notion of software-defined networking via other mechanisms.
Yes, yes, but it is painful. Even network access control, right? The first iterations were quite brittle and not very useful.
Yeah.
So that's why I say I've got battle scars from being at the tip of the spear on these fronts and then looking at the current solution saying, what is old is new again, right? But it's improved and then maybe it actually works now.
We're definitely seeing a lot of talk and interest in SSE and SASE. Market-wise, is that coming at the expense of traditional hardware appliance sales?
Absolutely. So there is pressure happening in terms of share shift. And so one of the markets that we've been tracking since 2008 that has seen very brutally is a traditional secure web gateway appliance, right? These are the on-prem boxes. Right. So that's one of the nice things about having the historical record is they can see these shifts and trends that are happening between certain appliance segments and the up-and-comers like SSE. Like when I joined, we were still tracking WAN optimization appliances and SSL VPN appliances. And it's like, and IPS appliances, it's like, they're dead. And so right now, secure WebGate appliance is one of the clear ones that is, it's not necessarily dead, but it's a very niche appliance these days. And it used to be quite large.
Because they're either getting folded into like an SD-WAN or an SSE solution?
Into a SASE solution, particularly an SSE. Now, there still is a need for an on-prem CPE. Now, I get asked frequently, it's like, especially from the equity side, since we talked to a lot of banks, it's like, is hardware dead? Are firewalls dead? And it's like, since everyone's talking about cloud delivered and software, is sheet metal going to go away? And I say, no, but it just won't be the growth market that it used to be.
And I mean, there's some things in the segments that you're covering here in the network security, I'm air quoting the network security group, like firewalls. There are some things that a lot of the cloud delivered firewalls or virtualized firewalls are basically the same thing we had on-prem, just virtualized into an appliance and or, you know, plugged into a cloud. But then there's this other, you know, shift with some of the other segments in the space like SASE and SSE and some of the SWGs where it's a fundamentally different solution that is cloud native, cloud first, being delivered in a different solution delivered in a different way instead of the same solution delivered a different way. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like
how do you track and differentiate that trend?
In the data sets that I produce, I track what I call form factors. I track hardware, I track virtual, which is kind of basically a software implementation of a hardware appliance, and then as a service, predominantly SaaS. So I categorize vendors and their solutions into those three buckets, which then leads me to understand is what is happening there. And no great surprise, it's the as a service where people aren't managing and care and feeding an appliance or a widget per se is what's been growing the fastest. And one of the press releases I pushed out in my latest forecast is that within the next 24 months, the sum of virtual appliances or software plus what's delivered as a service from the cloud will be over half of the network security market. And that's impressive considering 5 or 7 years ago, it was a much smaller sliver that was not hardware.
In addition to the form factor, there's also the whole, is it CapEx or OpEx? You're tracking that, I assume, a little bit differently as well.
Yes, that's a consumption model. I don't produce the data sets to say, because you look at, like, it's pretty simple with the SaaS that it's an OpEx, right? It's like no one sells an SSE as a CapEx type of engagement. But on the hardware side, you do see a spectrum going from traditional CapEx where you sell it once and it's yours to almost quasi-leasing models where it's a subscription. And then there's all sorts of financial models in terms of who owns it at the end of the day. But for the customer, the outcome is more of an OpEx experience because they just pay $30 a month and there's a little hardware widget that the blinky lights and it does its thing and they don't have to worry about a big bill.
Surprisingly though, we're not seeing, you know, if you're watching hardware sales decline, but as a service or virtual sales increase, it's not affecting the vendor bottom lines. They're still finding a way to charge you a premium, whatever the form factor.
Sure. There is always money to be made. Right? It's like, it's not a question of, I think what you're granting to that ASPs and is there somehow less money to be made on the per unit sale? And the answer is no, because if anything in secured land, you always seem to be getting more with each generation. And so unlike, though I get asked, it's like, why is it that firewall ASPs just gradually increase over time versus decline over time? And that's a reflection that over time, the customer gets more, right? It's like we look at firewalls and they took on IPS, they took on VPN responsibilities. Now they're taking on SD-WAN responsibilities in certain instances. So for what remains of a given market or how it's growing, yes, vendors continue to make good profits.
I guess to me, it's interesting because back in the day, if you asked a vendor, you know, how come this firewall appliance is so expensive? They would say, well, we had to get the highest end CPU to handle all the functions. In some cases, maybe we built the custom ASIC and had to do that development to go actually build the chip. And of course, there's actual metal and components. But now it's all cloud delivered where I'm getting a 10th or 100th of an actual physical box. So shouldn't I be seeing my bill go down in line with that decrease? And the answer is no.
Well, it may be cheaper than the physical appliance, but the value is still there. And the value today in security land, even in hardware, is a software, right? And so whether that software is running on a proprietary piece of sheet metal or running in the cloud, you're really paying for the software, not as much the hardware these days.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, one of the other articles, you know, Drew and I were looking at had to do with Palo rebooting CNAPP and shifting their Prisma to Cortex. And talk us through this. So I'm specifically interested in the shift from Prisma to Cortex. I'm also just curious about CNAPP because this is one of the acronyms that I don't fully understand. Like so many of these acronyms are just really ambiguous. You know, there's CSPM, which is Cloud Security Posture Management. We're used to that one. Cloud Infrastructure Entitlement Management, CIEM, that's a new one to me. Data Security Posture Management, DSPM, which is in the running in one of my Slack groups for is it cyber or is it kink acronyms. Like there's acronyms for everything.
There is, right?
Yeah. So anyway, talk us through CNAPP and then talk us through your analysis about what Palo is doing here with the Prisma solution.
Sure. Boy, well, you know, as analysts, we get paid by creating new acronyms. So
yeah, I know. I tell everybody that when I speak at events.
CNAP looks like a rich vein.
Yeah.
That's right.
You made a lot of money on this one right here.
But I can't lay claim that I invented this because I've got friends at Gartner that did. But to me, it was CNAP and its all of its offshoots are really about, once you go to the public cloud, you have an entirely different set of security challenges pertaining to the development of applications. So that's the first leg in the stool. The deployment of applications, that's the second leg in the stool. And then runtime, that's the third leg in the stool. So just think of it as a three-legged stool, as I described, security challenges that exist in the public cloud infrastructure. And so CNAP is, for better or for worse, because it's similar to the SASE journey that when I started looking at CNAP several years ago, some vendors found it objectionable to be called a CNAP. I guess it wasn't as cool as SASE, right? Because that was as cool, SASE. CNAP didn't have that same ring. But now it seems that the more comprehensive vendors that provide solutions that cover that three-legged stool of problems that I outlined, so development, deployment, and runtime, and call themselves CNAP, and they may come with a pedigree of a certain one of those legs of the stool. And so think of then of these solution sets that are specific to that use case of public cloud as a starting point for CNAP. And so I think, JJ, you were asking, so what about Palo, right? So Palo's journey into CNAP was one based on acquisition with a bit of internal development. And I think I'm up to tracking either 7 or 8 different acquisitions over the last 7 years that Palo did. In the spirit of this umbrella of CNAP, because you look at their portfolio of capabilities in the data sheet, they can check off all the boxes across those three legs of the stool that I painted: development, deployment, runtime security of cloud workloads. However, because it was an acquisition-based strategy, what we saw was that you had these 7 modules that lived largely on their own, which, well, if I have a particular need, that's great, but I want something where there's cross-pollination. And that's really where the market has been heading to have cross-pollination of the workflows. And so now I see Cortex Cloud is that reboot that brings Palo from a world where it was a loose confederation of perhaps the individual companies that they purchased to one where it's now tied to the all-knowing Cortex, the brain, the SecOps platform that they sell to their customers.
We went from Frankenstein to something a little more. You can say single pane of glass. It's okay. No public stonings, no shots, no nothing crazy.
Well, JJ, you know that I spent many years on the vendor side and I took my rocks and of when we use single pane of glass for network management, right? And we were talking about SD-WAN and software-defined networking. So I've learned my lessons, but sure, single pane of glass, or at least the workflows are tied presumably a little bit better. And I think that's good for Palo on paper because you've got these other two vendors, CrowdStrike and Wiz, who have just been killing it in this space, according to our measurements.
Yeah.
It sounds like you see CNAP as a distinct category as opposed to sort of what traditionally happens when a new environment opens up, like public cloud, we just sort of reduplicate what we were doing on-prem in the cloud, but CNAP sounds like it's taking a different approach to cloud security.
At least up until now, I wanted to paint the picture in a more black and white. I think now we're starting to enter some shades of gray because a lot of the clients or enterprises out there aren't cloud native or cloud only. They've got on-prem, right? And so now the narrative is starting to come into view. It's like, that's fantastic that we've got a solution for the cloud, but guess what? I'm split between hybrid cloud, private cloud, traditional on-prem. I want something that starts building connective tissue amongst these different domains. And so it starts blurring the line because you've got traditional vulnerability management, you got SaaS, DaaS, software security, you've got other tooling coming from the SecOps side. So the water is getting increasingly murky. And I think for the moment, given the amount of innovation that's happening with like DSPM, data security posture management, there are still some very cloud specific things which drive innovation, I see, that let the market flourish onto its own. But long-term, I see this desire of the pendulum to shift towards, hey, let's treat this and see how we can not fracture or bring some visibility across these different landscapes in a better way.
Mm-hmm. I can already hear the marketing, like a unified view across your on-prem, private cloud, multi-cloud. Yeah.
I see you got issued a marketing bingo card too.
We try to at least fill 3 blocks per episode.
Yes.
I said single pane of glass. I did my part.
I said unified view.
That's right. Those are two key ones right there.
Nobody said synergy yet, which is always in the middle.
That's the freebie. Everyone gets a freebie.
I'm curious, you know, looking, I guess I'll talk about enterprise spending. Do you see enterprise spending actually increasing, or is sort of the pot of money just shifting among different categories depending on technology changes, like the change from hardware firewalls to virtual firewalls, or from on-prem to cloud, or back and forth? Does that bucket of money actually grow, or does it just move?
It's a combination of both, but on the whole, it is increasing. It has always been increasing. We've never seen an overt decline year to year. And as I mentioned, in 24, it seemed like a reboot year where things slowed down. They didn't go into a negative territory. But we see, like on the firewall side, one of the key questions that I was asked a couple of years ago, it's like, is there ever going to be a firewall refresh after the big refresh that happened in the pandemic? And we're starting to see it now. So the answer is yes. We are starting to see people upgrade their hardware. This is just one of those cyclical things in the technology landscape, because the same thing is happening on the networking side, right? So the campus and my colleagues who cover that space, it's like 2024, things slowed down, and now things like are starting to pick up. Of course, in the US and other parts of the world, we've got the ambiguity about the governments.
Tariffs and federal funding. And
exactly. So that hasn't yet come to pierce in a negative way, but on the whole, the picture looks rosier than it did in 24.
I've always thought about when you talk to enterprises and talk about their security issues, one of the things they say is we don't have enough money to really address this problem. Do you feel like if an enterprise had infinite resources to spend on InfoSec, InfoSec would be solved, or?
Well, vendors would be happy, weren't they? But the short answer is no, right? It's like 20 years ago, I got my CISSP, but at some point failed to renew it. And one of the things they beat into me is like, security is about technology, processes, and people. And I see that day in and day out. You can spend all the money you want on technology, but if the processes aren't there or the people aren't aware of what basic things they need to do, you're still going to get hit. Mm-hmm. So the short answer is no.
Okay. I mean, I think that's good to know, because there are some vendors who will tell you, well, if you did spend enough, you'd be okay. But I agree with your take. Another question, we sort of looked over the horizon a little bit around the impact of AI. It's looking even further forward. Do you have any thoughts on quantum computing and how it might impact network security or the network security market?
It already is. Not that we've got a quantum computer that exists, though the one that Microsoft announced seems pretty interesting, but the quantum resistant cryptography has been a topic that I've been fielding inquiries here and there, not massively. And I think maybe it won't be as bad as the year 2000 problem, if you remember that.
Y2K.
Y2K all over again, right? But there is elements of that that brought me back in terms that, sure, there are algorithms that in the foreseeable future, as quantum computing gets better, are going to be able to get broken. And so that means that we need to start upgrading those, particularly the asymmetric ciphers that are weak, to put the new ones in. And so for the enterprises, what that means no differently than Y2K is that you just have to make sure that the systems that you do have can be upgraded. And of course, vendors will take that opportunity to insert the latest and greatest to not just drive a software upgrade, but a full-blown upgrade to the next iteration. So bottom line here is that, yes, there is the quantum resistant ciphers that need to be thought about in the near term. Beyond that, it's pretty wide open, right? It's like quantum computing on paper can lead to a lot of bad things in breaking security if they hold true, that all of a sudden we can decipher what previously has been undecipherable.
Is there any reason? I mean, since we have the post-quantum crypto algorithms, and they've, you know, now, at least in the US, right, our federal government has approved several for use. Is there any reason for the vendors in the space, especially like around firewalls, not to just go ahead and work this into the product? This is one of the things that baffles me, because I don't understand from the OEM side of manufacturing. It seems like we've got it. It's not any extra work for them to just go ahead and sprinkle that in there. What's the holdup? Why are the vendors not doing this already?
Money.
Is it more expensive, or is it just because it's the time and the resources to recode or re-whatever?
You hit the nail on the head, right? It's like, sure, they will go back to a certain level of platforms in the history of their portfolio, but it boils down to the cost, or in certain instances, there may be some memory or processing requirements that can't be met. But by and large, it's like you're eating dinner and the last thing is the vegetables on your plate. You just don't want to do it. You just don't want to eat it. That's like... It's good for you. You should do it. But
I just say it, Mauricio, you have hit on two of our catchphrases. You mentioned security in the intersection of networking. That's the catchphrase for the show. And my sign-off tag is eat your security vegetables. So I don't know how you did it, man. But
which, just for the record of everybody listening, I am not on board with that. That's a Drew thing. That's just a Drew thing. It's his thing. He can do it. I have hated that phrase since the first time I heard it. As a vegetable lover, I am offended.
This is the first time I heard that, JJ. I guess we have to have a conversation.
It depends on the sort of vegetable. Let's put it that way. Not all vegetables are equal.
I love all of them. All of them. Even broccoli now. Broccoli used to be my holdout vegetable, but I even like broccoli now.
Oh, there you go.
Should we talk about blockchain? No, I'm kidding. Just kidding. You guys got another free square today. All right. Well, I know we're right at our time, Drew. So any last thoughts?
No, I just want to thank Mauricio for coming on and giving us sort of a peek inside an analyst firm and how you guys work and what you're looking at. I thought it was really interesting. If folks are interested in finding out more from you or from Dell'Oro, do you have any suggestions on, you know, where they can contact you or where they should go?
Sure. So the website's always a easy starting point. People can hit me up on LinkedIn. So Mauricio Sanchez, not many of us in LinkedIn. I'm at Dell'Oro. Feel free to reach out and let me know what you think or if you got questions.
Awesome. We'll also have some links to articles and research notes that you've published that are available for everyone to read, but that'll be in the show notes that accompany this podcast. Thank you again, Mauricio, for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for being here for another episode of Packet Protector. If you have a topic you want us to cover, you can find us on LinkedIn or at packetpushers.net/community, where you can join our free Slack channel with other IT and security pros. Got a comment, correction, or question? Reach out on packetpushers.net/FU. We do love follow-up. We appreciate when listeners reach out. I'm going to say eat your scary vegetables. JJ, do you have a sign off?
I'm going to have to think about that.
All right. Work in progress. Thanks, everybody.